Hello, you're listening to The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. My name is Petrolano Ali, and I'm your host. In 2005, millions of Malawian farmers were in need of food aid. Rain had disappeared for months, and the country's corn crop reached a critical growth period. The next year, Malawi's government distributed 3.4 million coupons to farmers to subsidize purchases of inorganic fertilizer and improved seeds. The program has been praised as a proactive policy that has transformed the nation's food security. In fact, it's been called the Malawi Miracle. But a recent study published in Nature Plants claims the program was not as miraculous as portrayed. So, what was it? Here to tell us about the truth behind the Malawi Miracle is the lead author, Joseph Messina, geography professor at Michigan State University. He spoke to David Paulson for The Food Fix.
Dr. Messina, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Just what is the Malawi Miracle? Can you describe for us what's going on there?
Sure. Malawi's a small country in southern Africa, about the size of Ohio. And for many, many years, they've had a smallholder agricultural system, subsistence agriculture, very small farms, farmers growing crops basically to feed their own families and then sell whatever they have left. The Malawi Miracle was a fertilizer subsidization program that the government instituted to provide fertilizer for the maize farmers across the country. And it was reported to have substantially changed the outcomes for the vast majority of people.
So they were better fed, they grew more corn.
The basic story is that with this additional fertilizer, yields would improve. Maize is one of those miracle crops where when you put on more fertilizer, you do get more maize as a result. And you expect that to happen. So the idea was behind providing this fertilizer to all these farmers that inevitably they would get more maize, more product at the end, more greater yields at the end of the season.
And that was reported widely that that's what happened?
Right. So it was partly political to provide fertilizer to so many people. The country is quite rural. And so it was a national policy. And it was reported in the New York Times, The Economist, many, many different journals, and then published very widely after the fact. But it was most prominently portrayed as a success through the FAO in Rome. Which reported agricultural statistics for Malawi showing really substantial improvements in yield after the introduction of the program.
Again, FAO being?
The Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations.
So you did some research and I take it you found out that the Malawi Miracle may not have been as miraculous as everyone seemed to think?
Right, so everybody believed it to be true. I believed it to be true. I entered this process looking for lands on the margin, so the places in Malawi where the agricultural yields were really low. And so what you would expect to find in a country, in any country, is that you would have some sort of normal distribution. You would have areas in the country where they were producing a lot of maize, other places where we were producing very little maize per unit area. And so we had a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation grant to explore sustainable intensification strategies for agriculture in these marginal lands. So really just looking for marginal lands, I expected to find places that were improving. And what we found initially was that it was declining everywhere. The national trend was in decline, which completely called into question this report that the Malawi Miracle had occurred. I assumed I was wrong.
Well, were you looking at different data than what was being reported in the miracle?
Very different data. Most agricultural statistics are yield cuts and samples over small areas. They're collected, aggregated, reported as from counties or, in the case of Malawi, districts or environmental planning areas, and then nationwide. And those statistics, agricultural statistics, are collected and disseminated widely. We were using remote sensing. So we were using the MODIS products, which are a series of satellite data products collected by NASA with daily global coverage that provide a nice history, a nice record of the Earth's surface. And so the Terra and Aqua satellites, the MODIS products, go back until about 2000. And this regular time series of data allow us to get a better handle on the trajectories of land use and on agricultural production over long periods of time. Of course, we were looking back in time, and this Malawi Miracle occurred a decade ago.
I want to make sure you understand. So the difference is you were looking at actual evidence of plant growth. Is that correct?
Right.
Whereas the other folks, the previous folks who said we've got a miracle going on here, were looking at modeling data?
So there are two parts to that answer. As it's reported to the FAO, these are yield cuts. The corn is collected, harvested, collected. It's weighed, it's measured in various places, in a few places around the country. Then it's aggregated based on what people think the area under cultivation happens to be in any given year. And then that sum is reported to the FAO. We were looking with our remotely sensed data at the plant responses to the climate and soil conditions, fertilizer and the rest, over the entire country.
And you said your initial reaction was that you must be wrong?
I was convinced that I'd done something wrong. I thought part of it was the fact that it's in the southern hemisphere, and the growing season is during our winter. And many of the data products, the early data products that we used, are collected or produced on an annual cycle with a very much northern hemisphere bias, so that the growing season in the northern hemisphere is what's used. So I just assumed it might be that. Then I just started thinking, well, maybe the farms are too small, I'm not capturing them correctly, or they're too heterogeneous, there are too many different crops being grown. But as you whittle away at the different possible explanations for this decline, ultimately you come to a conclusion that there's something else behind this decline that we're seeing with the remotely sensed data.
And what did you discover?
We found that the remotely sensed data, no matter how we sliced it, diced it, modeled it, and what regardless of which product we used, reported the same thing repeatedly. We were provided with the agricultural statistics in a spreadsheet by Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Food Security in Malawi that included the production reports for that entire period, for the period of the FISP program. And when exploring the spreadsheet, the data that they provided to us, we realized that there was a single coding error between what was provided to us versus what's reported in the FAO, and that single switch, a single digit from a 2 to a 5, rather a 5 to a 2 in the case of the FAO, changes the yield estimates profoundly. We think somebody just wrote down the wrong number. Somebody took a 5 and turned it into a 2.
Okay.
So that was one piece of it. Another piece is the fact, and I mentioned this already, that typically the way it's done is that there are yield cuts, there are yield reports that are provided, and it's based upon what's actually collected and harvested. And we found more than one case where the pre-harvest estimates were reported as the harvest. The estimates are quite frequently wrong. In fact, the worst harvest in the last decade for Malawi, which occurred right before FISP began, was a year where the growing season started really well and the early estimates were quite positive, but then a long, hot, dry spell caused the failure of the maize crop. So if you made an estimate at the beginning of the season, the middle of the season, you looked like you were gonna have a great year. But because of this hot, dry spell, at the absolute worst time of the year for flowering for maize, it meant that the crop failed. So if you're reporting an estimate from the middle of the season as the yield at the end, you can be quite widely off. The same body that collects the estimate reported that the estimates are usually off by 30%. So this fact that they're translating an estimate into a yield and reporting it, and they're identical numbers down to the kilogram for a country, means that it's really unlikely that the numbers are reliable that are being provided or have been provided, at least in some of the years, to the FAO.
But don't the people at the United Nations and elsewhere and people who are in the business of doing things like you, don't they know that they use the pre-estimate instead of an actual harvest? Or is the expectation to be an actual harvest?
The expectation is that it's an actual harvest, and that's how it's reported. So it's written down as if it's the harvest cuts, and those are the numbers. But they're just not. They simply, at least in some cases, are the pre-harvest estimates being reported again. The thing is to remember is that with this program, you always expect, everybody expects there to be a maize benefit for this fertilizer. So everyone was biased, naturally biased, with confirmation bias, to believe that it was working.
How widely different was the actual from what had been reported?
We saw a difference of around 30%. Now, one of the things that is a legitimate criticism of the work that we did is that we don't have harvest cuts either. Nobody has from that period. So what we decided to do was try to model the difference. And there are quite sophisticated models that were developed in the United States, but around the world, to estimate yield from remotely sensed data. And so we decided to do the same thing. We used the same remotely sensed data products actually a particular one called net photosynthesis, and then changed what's known as the harvest index. And so the harvest index is the ratio of food to biomass. So you can have a corn stalk, a single plant, and it might not have any ears of corn on it, or it might have a lot. And so that difference between none and a lot is captured by the harvest index. As you put more fertilizer on maize, you get a better harvest index. So we figured the most optimistic case. We'll turn the entire country into the absolute best maize production in the world. So we gave it a harvest index of 0.6, so that ratio of food to biomass, and we tried to replicate what was being reported from the FAO, and there was simply no way to do it. Even with the best possible harvest index, so the whole country's getting it at the best possible rate, we couldn't do it. We couldn't replicate the results.
Well, this seems unfortunate and erroneous, but really, ultimately, what's the downside to this? It's one country's production for 1 year was wrong.
There's a big downside. The largest one, of course, probably for the people of Malawi, and the fact that the government invested 70% of its agricultural budget on a program that ultimately failed. But it has broader implications as well. It's become these kinds of fertilizer subsidy programs because of the report of success, wild success. Other countries around Africa started adopting a very similar program. So you've seen this expansion of these kinds of programs across Eastern and Southern Africa, widely across Africa. I don't actually know how many countries, but it's over many. And now it calls into question both the rationale for doing it in the first place, as well as the potential for success for the program over the long term.
But wouldn't we know by now those other programs that have expanded, won't they show either they worked or they don't if we have good numbers? Or are you questioning numbers everywhere?
I think the numbers vary widely in quality. I think the program could work in some places. This kind of fertilizers do work in a lot of places. Places that have soils that are clearly deficient in the nutrients that are provided in these fertilizer packets will respond quite successfully to their inclusion. In places like Malawi, where the soils are tired, Malawi's densely populated, there's not a lot of empty land. Lands have been farmed for a long time. In those kinds of places, these programs may not work, regardless of where it's applied. We're seeing other behaviors that come out from these programs that call into question the sustainability of these programs, where farmers say, well, I've got this fertilizer coming in, I'm going to plant corn every year, maize, over and over again. And corn's really hard on the soil. If you look around Michigan, go out here, you're gonna see every farmer that's planting corn is swapping it with soybeans, most likely. Every other year, corn, soybeans, to try to do soil restoration. Corn has better yields, and that's why everybody wants to grow it. But there are other downstream effects from these kinds of subsidization programs that need to be taken into consideration.
Does this mean that we are making significant decisions based upon faulty data?
This is a really significant decision being made on a story that everyone wanted to believe, but is simply not true.
And again, it's not just a single story, though, because it has implications for how we are measuring elsewhere.
Many of the data sets that the FAO collects are simply provided by national government organizations for countries around the world, the vast majority. And many of these data reports are very good, but the range of quality in these data reports should be carefully considered before national, international policies are put into place.
Is there any kind of that assessment going on with this data?
I would assume so, but I don't know.
Well, wouldn't the solution simply be, let's do it the way Dr. Messina did it. Let's all use remote sensing and then we don't have to worry about that. Is that possible? Is that too expensive?
It's one solution among multiple. It's not a perfect solution. Malawi's a good case for this kind of experiment because there's not a lot of internal movement among the population. So the land is mostly occupied. We're not seeing farmers move into currently unfarmed areas through an extension process because it's simply not available. So in Malawi, when any sort of intervention is put into place, it really occurs on those places. So the effects are all endogenous. We put in fertilizer, it's those farmers farming the same plots they've always farmed, and then we can see what happens, as opposed to maybe a place like Tanzania where they might move somewhere else where there's more available land and the land sizes are larger. It's that sort of dense rural population in Malawi that makes it a particularly good case to study here.
Where do we go from here? Where do you go from here?
Well, I think there are multiple things that can be done. First, I think we do need to recognize that there are other tools available to us as a community that we use in the United States through remote sensing or field work that are different than some of the traditional methods that have been collected, say, through agricultural economics or in agronomy. And it takes a multidisciplinary approach, an interdisciplinary approach to address some of these complex, almost intractable social problems like smallholder farmer sustainability.
So correct me if I'm wrong, I want to make sure I understand this. So there's a tool issue, a discrepancy in the tool. But again, one of the things you found was just a simple error of transcription. Is that correct?
For me, it never made sense that when I looked at the data, that there was a decline in the amount of land being farmed. And it was interesting in the scientific literature after that was published afterwards, that a lot of people tried to explain that away. But anybody who goes to the field, who goes to Malawi and works with farmers and sees the environments, knows that they're not taking 250,000 hectares of land out of production simply because of having this fertilizer subsidy. It made absolutely no sense at all to me that piece was there. But everybody thought it was true, and I thought, well, maybe it happened and there might be some other reason. But everybody tried to explain it away. And I think there's a fundamental argument here for the perils of confirmation bias in science, because everybody believed the data to be true because if you put more fertilizer in maize, you get more maize.
And so instead of questioning the numbers, they tried to justify.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I think happened. There was a justification of a decline in area in production to help support this massive increase in yields.
And is your concern then that if this happened once, it could happen elsewhere?
Absolutely. I think it could happen anywhere where we have data-poor environments. Much of Africa is data-poor. There's a great community of people who have invested incredible amounts of time and energy building sensor networks, and many governments, the United States government has invested an awful lot in helping to build their sensor networks and collect information over Africa, but for much of Africa, the data networks are really quite poor. So we're often making conclusions on rather sparse data without the benefit of being there in person.
Well, the Malawi miracle got a lot of attention, and it was a good news story. Everybody was happy. It would strike me that your findings are very controversial. Are they, and have you heard anything about that?
Well, the paper was just released, and I've presented the results a couple of times. The first time I presented the results in Bamako, Mali, I was vilified by the audience. They did not believe it could possibly be right.
Did you get booed, or what happened?
They were yelling and standing up and shaking their fingers at me. It was quite an angry audience in Mali. Sounds similar to Malawi. But in West Africa, I was there, and they just couldn't believe it. It so overturned what people wanted to believe about this program. There were two things from that experience for me. The first is one that I adopted in the paper, and that was the question about harvest index. And so that is the inclusion of harvest index in the paper, in the model, for me, was directly the result of that paper. The other part was that the conversation talked a lot about driving around Malawi and seeing this great maze. Part of the paper, in fact, that we haven't talked about is that I was interested if the spatial distribution, remember I said that I modeled the whole country as if everywhere was perfect maize. So I was just interested to see if the fertilizer was distributed equally, because there were reports you could capture by district, by planting area, where the fertilizer coupons went, and you could model the effect, so changes in production across the country. It turns out the vast majority of the improvement was around the two major population centers, the districts around. So if you got off of the airplane in Lilongwe or Blantyre, drove around the city and out into the countryside and looked at corn, you happened to be going in the best place to see it. So it just wasn't distributed equally across the country at all. And that maldistribution, I think, had an effect on both the success of the program overall, but also in helping to perpetuate this belief that it was widespread, because it was a nationwide program. Nobody was really paying attention to the fact that it wasn't actually being distributed nationwide or equally across all districts.
How is this paper going to influence your work going forward in terms of what you decide to do and how you decide to do it?
One of the things that this piece of work did for me was it really energized the idea of focusing on targeting. If we're going to pursue development strategies anywhere in the world, we have to think about in advance how we target these, how they reach the right people. And it was interesting to me to see how poorly targeted this program and many of the other development attempts that various aid organizations around the world have tried have been with respect to real conditions on the ground, you know, the experienced climate, changes in soils that might be occurring, or availability of labor, and things like that. And I've started to move a lot of my work in this past year into targeting, trying to improve where we make, you know, make better decisions with respect to our development dollars.
So is your concern that the international community is making significant and expensive decisions on what could be very poor data?
That's a big concern of mine. They're developing very expensive programs and launching them without consideration of the geographic, the spatial, the social, the environmental factors that really will limit or promote success of any of these development programs.
So is the solution simply a matter of better data gathering? Don't spend any money until we do a better job of it?
I think that's a small piece of it. I think a larger piece is an awareness that it's a very complex set of factors that drive the realized of people on the ground, especially in these smallholder farming communities. It's not just because they're all smallholder farmers with a small house and a small farm, and they're all growing maize and pigeon pea and a few other things. That doesn't mean that their experience, how they go about this, the environment in which they live, may not be generalizable in any sense. And making decisions based upon very small subsets of these populations is, I think, a big driver in the failure of so many development solutions to scale.
It seems to me like a situation like this would be ripe for some kind of political manipulation. How do politics fit into this story?
There are two pieces to the political story. The first is there was clearly a motivation by the government of Malawi to show success. They were investing an extraordinary amount of money in this program. It was the largest program in their agricultural budget, and it represented a large portion of the GDP of the country. They were clearly inclined to report success, so they're very happy to find the results that were presented. The other piece of this, and where it made a lot of press in the Western press, was because it was very quickly taken up by essentially the left, the political left, to use as a bludgeon against neoliberal economics or the free market. And so you see quite a few papers and op-eds in the New York Times and many other places talking about how this is a rejection of neoliberalism, a rejection of the market, and that the state control of these large programs in the developing world context really does work. And that, I think, contributed to this belief that it worked. More people wanted to believe it, in part because of that political bias that had nothing to do with the agronomy of the situation.
So again, your research doesn't indicate that fertilizer subsidies don't work.
Right. It may work. It didn't work in this case.
Dr. Joe Messina, thank you for being with us today on The Food Fix.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
And that's it from me, Petrolano Ali, on this episode of The Food Fix. We want to hear from you. You can email us with questions and comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. The Food Fix is produced by the Translational Scholars Program at Michigan State University, with funding from the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation, a development lab funded by USAID. Our theme music is the song Watching My Garden Grow by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Rilko. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.